Yo, what's good, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Textual Talk Podcast. I'm your host, HD. Man, we have a great episode for you guys today. Our guest is Miss Billy. She's also known as the STEM Storyteller. She is now a cybersecurity professional, and she's also a children's author, where she writes children's books about STEM. In today's episode, we'll talk about her background, how she pivoted into cybersecurity, what she likes about her job, and, you know, what made her decide to be a children's author. But you know what to do, guys. If you're watching right now, make sure you're going to hit that like button, hit the subscribe button, and share this out for the YouTube algorithm so more people can see this content. But without further ado, let's get into the video. All right. What's going on, Miss Billy, a.k.a. the STEM Storyteller? Let me make sure I'm on this mic real quick. Well, first, I want to start off with like a little icebreaker. And one of the icebreakers isn't fair because she's technically like an author. So I'm going to switch it to be, what does this one say? If you won $10 million tomorrow, what would you spend it on?
If I won $10 million, I mean, that's the dream, right? So if I won $10 million, I would definitely purchase properties all over the United States. Purchase a property in Jamaica. I would invest in stocks, crypto, NFTs, and I would build a home for children, for children that need support and help, and maybe they need to get away from a situation or something like that. A safe house. That's what I would do.
Okay. That's what's up. That's nice goals right there. All right, let's get into this real quick. So, guys, thank you for tuning in. If you're watching us on YouTube now, please make sure you hit that like button, share it out for the YouTube algorithm. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any other one of the streaming platforms, please make sure you follow the podcast and leave a comment. It helps us out in the rankings. But our lovely guest today is Miss Billy, and we're going to let her pretty much give her a little brief spiel about who she is right now.
All right. So, yeah, my name is Billy, and I go by STEM Storyteller on social media. Basically, I work in technology. I've been in tech for, let's say, 10 years now. I started out in real estate. I was a real estate agent, and I was doing well, and then the market crashed. So this was a long time ago. Market crashed. I didn't leave real estate, but I went and found a career. I just needed job stability. So I started working at a tech company, not knowing anything about tech. I started working in the mailroom. I just wanted to get a job, right? And work in the mailroom kind of moved around to different positions as the company acquired different companies and things happened. Jobs that I had were gone. And so they allowed me to, they put me in different positions within the company. After a while, I decided that I wanted to take control of my life and saw that the network engineers looked like they were doing pretty good for themselves. And I said, hey, you know, what do you guys do? And found out what network engineering was and decided to take that career path initially. And that brought me to where I am now.
That's dope. I love when people have unconventional starts to their journey. It's really cool because it lets the listeners or the viewers know that I don't have to just have this typical background of what I think somebody in tech should have. And so that's really kind of what this podcast is about. It's kind of bringing out those unconventional ways to start in tech and also the representation piece, you know, Black people in tech as well, just because, you know, pretty much we're underrepresented. And to touch on what I just said about that is this past week I was at Afrotech and that was like, you know, it was a blast. I actually got a probably separate video I'm going to do on that. But I think I was telling somebody, it's like all these Black people that are here now are still the lower percentage in the grand scheme of things of everybody in tech. And I was like, you know, there's a crazy thing right there. It's like, that's probably the most Black people in tech people have probably seen like in one place or trying to get into tech in one place. But so earlier you said, you know, you were a realtor, then you decided, you know, hey, that wasn't going too good. I would like to assume, was this like the late 2000s, around like the recession in like 08, 09?
2006, 2007, yeah.
Okay, yes, yeah, so I figured it was around that time. But now, give us, I guess, okay, so a little bit about your early career. So working in the mailroom at a tech company, how did you go about getting your first tech role coming out of, you know, the mailroom? Like how did that work out? Were you just in there and then networking with, oh, what do you do? What do you do? And then like, kind of like, you know, how did that go for you?
Yeah. So working in the mailroom, I was exposed to more of the hardware division of the company where they just refurbished old equipment and sold it. And so I had communication with hardware engineers, and then moving around, I moved into more of a support position, sales support, and was exposed to pre-sales engineers and network engineers. So as I moved around, I was exposed to different teams within the companies, different roles. And so, and also the network engineers, they were pretty cool. You know, they would come and talk to me, and we would have conversation. And after a while, I just changed the conversation from regular talk to, hey, what do you do? You know, let me know what you do and how you do it. How can I do that? And the conversation changed from there. And they just provided me with books, materials, websites, pretty much everything I needed to get down the path. So it was just talking with people and deciding for myself that I was fed up with just doing just random roles and having not a career, no control over my life, and nothing that I could pass down to my children, nothing. Just being thankful that I was still at a company and they were still allowing me these positions. That wasn't enough. So I just decided for myself that I wanted more and was at a tech company. You know, hey, you know, ding, like I'm here. Tech looks to be the future. Let me see what I can get out of this company, out of those that are around me who are so willing to help me.
That's great. That's great. At the time you were doing this, you were already a mother, right?
Yes. Okay. A mother of three.
Okay,
and
cool.
A wife.
Okay, I'm sorry. And a wife. I'm sorry. I didn't want to glance over that because, you know, that's a big thing. I only said that because recently I've been talking to some people, like, you know, my girlfriend and others, about, and my podcast isn't like this, but I'm trying to like drill this point in real quick. Like, actually this is for like learning points for like, women who may be considering a pivoting from like what they initially do. And I feel like as women, they need jobs that are a little bit more flexible, because a lot of them are either parents or wives. And, you know, sometimes like, the dad may or may not have that flexible role. You know, most of the time the woman is kind of grinning. It's like that, you know, that caregiver. But, you know, sometimes the paths some women pick aren't flexible, and it kind of doesn't allow them to mother in a way that they possibly want to, when you have to deal with like a lot of babysitters or find something out, you can't get off and get your kid. And it's just, you know, a lot of things. So I always like to tell people, like, another reason why like tech is beneficial, because most of the time they are pretty flexible, even if you aren't remote. Some of the roles, if you go into the office, they don't just make you, you know, have to put in PTO to go grab your kid or something, take them to the doctor. You can just go take them to the doctor and either finish your work at home or whatever. So I've just been trying to push that as a point as well, to where like you can still be around your kid. You can still go catch events and all these other things without having the hassle of someone saying, no, you have to be here. You can't take off work and all those things. Because, you know, as a kid, people think that kids really care about, you know, oh, their mom or dad bought them this cool toy or all this kind of stuff, a little bit. But as they get older, they remember like places where that they were taken and did you come support me at certain things. So kids really care more for your presence over presence. I like that right there. But I didn't mean to turn that into that, but I just really just thought about that. I was glad that you said that it brought up your kids and want to do more for them with your career path. But
yes.
So actually you already answered one of these questions. I will ask you this now that I know that you, let's talk about this. Actually, I'll flip the question. And I watched a little bit of some of your episodes about like trying to get into cybersecurity, right? So what made you decide that you kind of wanted to pivot into cyber, and how did you go about doing that? I think those are probably like two questions that are pretty cool to ask.
Yeah, definitely. So when I was in technical college for network engineering, most of the courses that I took, a lot of the courses that I took were geared towards network security as well. And so I was so close to obtaining my network engineering degree, and I only needed to take a few classes to get my cybersecurity degree. So I decided to get a dual degree. And in taking those courses, I just gained an interest in cybersecurity. And I also am a futurist. I think about the future a lot, and wanted to definitely go on a career path that would sustain me in the future. I looked at network engineering and where that was going. And for me, that wasn't where I wanted to continue. I felt like cybersecurity was the future for me.
That's dope. Just briefly, based off of, I brought up representation earlier, right? Was it hard for you to make that transition to get into cyber, or was it, you know, moderate? You know, I don't want to ever call anything easy, because online now everyone makes like getting to tech, getting to cybersecurity, networking, databases, cloud, it's easy. And we all know that it's not easy. But did you find that like challenging? I know in my own career, my path to cyber was challenging simply because I didn't have a plan. So without a plan is the reason why it took me so long to get there, and I didn't really know what I was doing. So what about you?
So going from network engineering to cybersecurity, I was doing network monitoring for a huge transportation company. And I actually left networking and went back to the company that I initially started at in the mailroom. Went back to that company and worked in a more of a sales technical capacity. And that allowed me to continue on my entrepreneurship journey and allow me time with my family, because in working in network engineering, it took so much time away from my family. I had to sacrifice a whole lot, so much that I left. And I took a step back and said, okay, let me see what career path is going to allow me time with my family and also make me happy. So again, went back to like a technical sales support role. And while in that role at that company, because previously they had allowed me to do on-the-job training in network engineering, before I got in network engineering, that company allowed me to do on-the-job training, which I was able to put on my resume. And that's why I left and did network engineering. When I came back, once I finished my cybersecurity degree and did some learning on my own and felt like I was prepared to step into cybersecurity, I approached my manager at the company, and she knew that I wanted to grow. Approached her, and she said, okay, and that she was okay with me talking to decision makers at the company about stepping into the cybersecurity division at the company, right? So what they did end up doing was creating a cybersecurity mentorship program, the first, for me, so that I can move from the role that I was in into a cybersecurity. So I was in that program for 1 year and studied and learned SOC analyst duties, and they allowed me on the job training for about a year. And once a position became open, that's when I finally got the role, and I've been a SOC analyst for 7 months now.
Nice. Let me see if I got a round of applause over here for that. Let me see if I got some clapping over here for that. Here it is. But as the viewers and the watchers know that I'm also, of course, I'm a cybersecurity professional, and I guess now you can add in LinkedIn instructor. I'm also a career coach, and a lot of times I advise people to do what you did. Go back either their current company or somewhere else and kind of network their way into shadowing and getting appreciated with that team to where they say, hey, we got to open it up. I like this person. Why not just bring them on versus, you know, going through this long hiring process of trying to find these people we don't even know when we got somebody who's been like watching us for a while. So hats off for that. And then I just go ahead and do ad hoc. It's like, and say this then, it's like, because I think one of my questions was like, what type of cybersecurity analyst are you? So you pretty much answered that. What do you like about working in a SOC environment?
What do I like about the environment? Well, it is fast paced. I love doing research. I love threat hunting, open source intelligence, finding out if alerts are malicious or not. I love doing research. And most recently, I'm moving into vulnerability management, actually, and learning vulnerability scanning and things like that and remediation. And so that is my new interest.
Got you. So, and one of the things I tell people also, like, we've over the last couple of years, I've been trying to dispel the notion about SOCs, right? Everybody thinks a SOC is just some lowly entry-level role. When I tell them, not really. I tell them, actually, it requires you to know a lot of different things, whether it's networking, OSs, things about the cloud, database, web attacks. It really requires you to have a wealth of knowledge. It's not as simple as people make it seem. There are some SOCs where all you do is look at alerts and you route them to like tier two where you're not doing anything. But for the most part, that's not it. But another reason why I try to push sometimes with people, if they want to, they don't really know what they want to do, but they want to be in security. Sometimes I try to dissuade them from going the SOC route because it is a super competitive role. If people believe it or not, like, it's very competitive. But also, the thing I like about the SOC is you get introduced to so many different technologies. So you may come in as a SOC analyst, and like you just said, I'm getting into vulnerability management. When I started, not the first SOC role, but my second role, I was a SOC analyst, but we called ourselves threat analysts. It's a marketing employee. We worked for MSS, and they were selling their services to clients. So threat analyst sounds better than SOC analyst. But we had a team. So we had all these different platform engineers. We had platform engineers that were over Tanium, CrowdStrike, McAfee EPO. Then we had people who did Tripwire. They did Qualys. I think they started bringing in Nessus after that. But then, so you get introduced to things like that, of course, being the SIEM engineers as well, or people who come in and do content strictly doing detections. But you get introduced to so many different sections of cyber to where you say, hey, you know what? I really like being a SOC analyst, but I really just want to focus on vulnerability management. Hey, can I, you know, learn Qualys? Can I learn Rapid7? Can I learn Nessus? Can I learn one of these tools and just do that for the company? So I'm happy you said that because where you start doesn't have to be where you finish. There's just so many different opportunities available to you when you start out, you know, working in a SOC. Okay, these are the good questions right here. What is the most important lesson you learned over your career?
The most important lesson I've learned in my career is, it may sound cliche, but like, you can do anything that you put your mind to. Like, whatever you want to do or whatever you want out of life, you can do it and you can get it. I've proven that to myself. Anything and everything that I've wanted, I've gotten. And it's as simple as creating goals and following through and just having the confidence that you can actually do it. So just believing in yourself and that you can do anything you want. It's so true.
Yeah. I like to call it the, who was I telling this to? I don't know if it was like one of my younger brothers or one of my friends, but I was just talking about something. I was just talking about like that law of attraction. And like, you're right. Like what you want, you know, you think about, you put in the work to get it, you meditate on it. It's like in your mind, like, oh, throughout the day, eventually it comes to pass. And I've been like that as well. Like, anytime, like if I go to something even simple, it's like, it went from the cars I wanted. Like if I really wanted a car, if I really want a certain job, which I'm kind of, I'll put that on the Patreon. The Patreon people know what's going on with my current situation. But even for salary, right? You know, that's one that's kind of like, you know, as being as a black people, it's kind of like hush, hush, and they don't want to talk about it, right? I talked about salary publicly a lot of times on here, but even the salary that I've wanted or the range I've wanted, I've thought about all the time. So by the time it's time to negotiate and I throw it out there, I'm not scared to throw it out there. I throw it out there. The worst thing they can say is no. The best thing they can say is yes. And so if you're out there listening right now and you're really still trying to break into cyber, one of my friends, she actually had kind of, at first got a little distraught about it and actually made a tweet saying like she was kind of discouraged about it. I talked to her behind the scenes about kind of getting in, but eventually it will happen. I always say like, you know, you just need that one company to tell you yes. I have that video idea where I said like 100 companies told me no. Really, it was more than that. I've had so many companies that, you know, I knew I was qualified for. I had lengthy interview processes, ghosting, you name it. But the right company comes along and says yes and changes like your whole trajectory of your career. So if you're out there, you know, don't give up. The right fit will come. You know, I'm not going to get too much in that. It sounds deep. But it's not deep. I'll just let you know it's going to come to pass. And then you're going to be happy because you put in a lot of work to get there. I'll just leave it at that. But what's one thing about your job or field of expertise that almost no one agrees with you about?
Everyone agrees with me. No one disagrees with me.
So it's nothing like far as... like a tool or something like, like I know for me, I talk about some tool. Like I think almost everybody would probably agree or disagree about me saying I don't like QRadar. Well, QRadar is okay, but it drops logs. I think everybody will agree that McAfee's SIM solution is garbage. Like, you know, you could come out here and say right now, hey, I believe, let me ask you this. Do y'all use automation at work? Do y'all use SOAR? Any SOAR tools?
Yes.
Which one? I don't want to throw one out there.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
I'm so scared working in the... Yeah, I'm like, I don't know what to say and what not to say. Okay, I'll answer your question, though. Something I wouldn't say that people disagree with me on, but they don't take urgency in, is the future of AI and automation and what it's doing to the jobs. And that's why I put so much importance on teaching children STEM and the future of STEM, because many of the positions that are out now are not going to be there when they get older, and they do need to learn coding. I was in a store yesterday that I normally shop at, a department store, and I noticed that they had self-checkouts. I'd never seen it. I shop there all the time, and the importance and the urgency for people to obtain skills that are sustainable for the future, I would say people are not with me on the urgency in that.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Grad school, I did a project on like the Internet of Things, smart cities. And that was 4 years ago. I'm here to tell you that I can say it right here. I interviewed a company recently who is owned by a larger car maker. So they're a subsidiary under them. But all they work on is IoT tech and smart cities. They actually have, and I can show you after this, they actually have like a smart city. And I think it's somewhere in China, if I'm not mistaken. But this is going to be the things that we start seeing pretty soon when we finally have our first smart city, the autonomous vehicles, even more interconnected, you know, devices in homes. These are the things that the kids or whoever's in college needs to look into and try to learn about more so they could be ready for the market. It's still not going to totally overtake like what's going on now. Like if we even go into cyber, I've said this for years, like all the IoT, smartware, wearable tech, healthcare industry, that they're going to be using these things. These are more jobs that they're going to need to be filled. So actually research and learn about these things now so you can have a skill set that's needed, because they're going to need people to pretty much secure these devices. Because if a hacker, which healthcare is already kind of like very vulnerable to cyber attacks. So imagine if once they start pushing these things out, and now you have somebody doing, you know, malicious actors to people's like wearable tech who actually need this, like their life and death depends on this stuff. Companies are going to pay big money for these things to be monitored, because of course they're making money, but they're going to pay the money for them to be monitored. So I definitely agree with you on that. And as for like the automation and things like that, so this will be somebody probably watches now, like the two biggest ones I know for SOAR automation, and for those that listen, SOAR means security, orchestration, automation, and response, would be Palo Alto's XSOAR and Splunk bought Phantom a couple of years back. Well, actually, Palo Alto, I think, bought, it was called Cortex by XSOAR, I think. So they both bought a platform. I've used both, and I feel like XSOAR is better just by ease of use. But the thing why people still be needed with automation is the fact that companies try to just buy the automation and throw it in the environment, but then don't do anything with it. You actually have to have a strategy about how it could be beneficial to your team and your company to kind of reduce, like the goal of automation is really kind of reduce level one SOC work. Like a lot of research and like trying to go get, you know, look up hashes and virus total or Joe's sandbox, whatever. So to where you can actually do things like that and throw it into XSOAR and it kind of does the task for you the way that you can go focus on doing a little bit more research or going through some more logs where you don't have to worry about going stop and click and doing all this other stuff. So it's definitely pretty cool when you know how to utilize it. And if you know how to, I think I want to say they both probably run on Python. So you know how to use Python, you kind of understand security principles and how to do that, you could just be a SOAR engineer as well. That's actually what my guy Kenneth does for EY. He works with Splunk and SOAR, and he teaches people that at Ellerton Cyber Academy. Let's see. All right. This is always a funny one when I ask people this. I'd say, how would your parents or friends describe what you do for a living?
Hi. I'm going to struggle with this one. I don't know. My parents would just focus on my entrepreneurial journey and just say that I inspire people for a living. But as far as my career, I mean, initially they just thought that I built things. I took boxes and I just made them work. You know, they would just see me with these boxes, these Avaya PBXs, and they just, you know, thought that I would take the box and make it magically work, but they didn't know all of the programming and everything that went into that. So that would be their level. They have no care though. They don't care.
Yeah. They just like, as long as, you know, my baby's happy and healthy, I'm fine. For me, I think I can't remember what my mom used to always think I did. She just knew I went to school for computers. And so it's like, and you can tell me if you get this or not. If anybody know you do anything with technology and computers, for whatever reason, you are the person that knows how to do everything for whatever reason. I don't even really deal with computer hardware, but hey, nephew, can you come over and look at my computer? I think it's doing this and whatever. I was like, I think I could probably fix it. It's kind of, but there's a whole bunch of stuff that, you know, that I really don't do, but I always attribute it to like being like a mechanic. I think she knew a little bit about cybersecurity. She tried to explain it before to somebody, and I tried to explain it to them in layman's terms of saying like what I used to do would be the equivalent of, I don't know, like blue team is like equivalent to a lot of roles. Like if you are on IR, technically it's like you're a detective because you're the second people to the scene. So you come later and then you really start looking for artifacts and actually really investigating. And then you also could be the SOC team as well. You also could be cops coming to the scene as well as firemen. Then you might have the paramedics. Like, it's like, I was making this, correlation to somebody had like a, this like meeting with this guy about a project he's working on. And I was telling about the similarities between like being a police officer, a detective, fireman, or like a paramedic and putting it into a cyberspace. So how it's, there's so much correlation right there and people really don't realize it. And I was like, I would definitely choose the cyber over possibly getting shot or running into a burning building because I have way more flexibility. And that's coming from a family of a fireman, right? If they ever asked me about it, I was like, you know, I believe y'all could do this like no problem because you have the transferable skills and the mental capacity to not panic when everything goes left because you've actually probably really much stared death in his face in the fires before. So that's if you're listening, if you're a fireman or something like that, you can do it. I actually have someone that's going to come on the show eventually. He pivoted. I think he was like a policeman or something like that for like 19 years. And now he's been doing cloud threat response, I think like the last 2 years. So that's going to be a good episode because I definitely want to ask him about, you know, how's he feel his transferable skills translated to what he does now. So I got one and then I'll let you kind of rock out on this, the question after this one. Cause I kind of asked you already, but, what are like some underrated tools that you use day to day in your job? And they don't have to even be a fancy. It could be something as simple as like for me, but now as a SOC analyst, like one of my most underrated tools was Notepad++. Like that was one of my most underrated tools. Cause I had a lot of the, either my Splunk queries I was going to use or some of the closing notes that I may use if I felt like this was similar and I just had to switch out, whatever I saw in the alert to kind of make it fit that one. But that was like one of my most underrated tools because it really sped up me having to retype something all the time. So what about you?
Yes. So you got to remember I'm 7 months in, so I only have a few tools that I stick to at this point or that are my favorites. So I know you talked about VirusTotal, but I use VirusTotal definitely to research hashes and IP addresses. Abuse IPB, I think it's called. That's another one that I use. And Google, okay? Google is a tool that we use. It's actually, when I first started learning about network engineering, they told me that Google was one of the tools that they used. And I didn't understand it until I got into the field, but it's definitely of good use to me. Those are some of the top two. I cannot remember all. There's like 20 or so tools, but those are some of the top ones that I use.
Is there any, so I'll say it like this, is there anyone, not necessarily like, I mean, it's a tool, I'll say like a tool that assists you in your job, like that, that you use every day that, you know, like OneNote or regular Notepad, email templates, you know, like, it's like, I'm trying to like, you know, it's like anything like underrated that people kind of like take for granted that they don't think about. Like that's what I was trying to get at you, but those actually, I'm glad you actually brought up like VirusTotal and I think you said abuse the IP because those are good sites, especially OSINT sites. Free interview tip right here. An interviewer may ask you, say, hey, you know, and I'm not saying this to you, I'm saying this like to my viewers or listeners. They're gonna say, hey, if a VirusTotal tells you something, you know, it's bad, you know, is it bad? Now, most people might want to say initially, yeah, because you know, VirusTotal told me it's bad. However, it doesn't necessarily mean it's bad. It could be something new. It just came out. It's not actually been analyzed correctly yet. Or you can throw a new hash in there and they'll say it's good, but that's because VirusTotal don't have any activity on it. So what you probably want to do more so is whatever file you're looking at, malware you're looking at, go check out your system logs in your OS or your EDR and look at the activity of what the actual file is doing using like some static analysis. And that way, that's why you can that way you can pivot your answer back to that, what you would do to actually determine if what you were looking at was actually malicious or not. Check on the behavior. Behavior is like going to be that key word, and I'll help you out on that question. But sorry about that. I've just been trying to educate a little bit more on my podcast. All right, so now let's get into the fun stuff. you mentioned earlier, you know, that, you know, you're an author, and while you're about, you know, started getting into teaching them about STEM, you know, at a very early age, which I definitely do need to get some of your books, especially for my little girls. They're young, but they'll remember what I read to them. What inspired you to write STEM children's books?
I was inspired by my own story and my story of just not having any examples or seeing any representation myself to where I can even have a goal or have a dream as a young child. And I mean, I didn't get into IT until my 30s, and I wasn't exposed to these opportunities and things like that. I mean, of course, I was in real estate, but for me, tech was a something different, different kind of opportunity for me. So my story and just not having, just not seeing what I wanted to be, I wrote a book about a little girl who wanted to become an engineer. And she goes through all of these different steps to build, and she learns about engineering as she goes along. I definitely, that story touched me because I wanted to show children that it's possible to become engineers and use myself as an example in that.
That's great. That's so great. Funny enough, though, I'm glad that you did that because I, so background on me, I think like I'm a multifaceted guy. My mother loves to read. Growing up as a child, I loved to read. I did. Like, I was really good at accelerated reader throughout, like, grade school. Really, I read, like, 2 or 3 books a week, depending on if I can get in my flow. Like, homework would be done. I'm in there reading, you know, books. I don't even know kids really do that anymore. It's because they got so much temptation with technology and stuff like that. But this also coming from a guy who used to love like playing his video game as well. But I've always thought about doing that too. Like, I mean, I have one book, right, for like how to get into cybersecurity, but I've also thought about, how to, like, and maybe that's somehow actually behind the scenes, but like far as like about black, you know, a black man or whatever, like doing something in cybersecurity, like, or making him like a superhero in cybersecurity or something like that. I mean, hey, if you're listening right now, you take the idea, just send me a free book. I'm not going to be mad. But, you know, because I do think we need that, because think about it. Kids that may be a little older than, and if you don't mind me asking, your target audience of like your, I guess, like the people that buy the book for the kids, is it like kindergarten through like 5th grade or something like that?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, that's what I figured. Anybody around that age, a little bit older, if they've ever seen something, if they think about hacking or whatever, they probably have seen like Mr. Robot, a black guy, you know, with a hoodie on, and that's what they think about, you know. And I know as kids, a lot of times they don't see themselves as doing something because they don't see their representation of it, like on TV or on screen or in a book. It's, you know, it's never them. So I definitely think what you're doing, like, it's important, you know, how many seeds you planted so far, you know, you never know. Like, do you get any, like, fan mail or anything like that where they write you and say, hey, I read your book, thank you for the book, and all this?
Yeah, when I put out my first book, Belladere the Engineer, the feedback, it was, I mean, it had me crying for, like, a year. It was so amazing. I didn't expect it. But mothers sending me videos of their daughters building things and saying, you know, this book inspired my daughter to go and build and look at what she built. And mothers telling me this was their children's favorite book, seeing a little black girl. This book came out in 2018, and it was before, I would say before a lot of these books came out, with the little black girl with the two Afro puffs. And so that was a representation that mothers just loved and gravitated towards. And so the feedback, I mean, it's been beautiful.
That's great. I'm going to make sure we definitely have all those links in the description. And I actually do want to do some type of giveaway, wherever you give away 2-4 books, whatever, you know, I'll buy them and we do that. But because that's what it's just all about. Like, especially kids always remember like their favorite books. Say, hey, I remember, I got inspired, you know, by this book. Cause we heard like a lot of people say like one of their favorite books, they've got inspired by doing something, but at a young kid. And it's good as well, because what we don't know is there are kids who are young, who are introduced to the coding and everything else at a very young age. So by the time they are in high school, some of them don't even go to college. They have big offers from big companies and they're already going to work for them. And so that's really where it's at. Like, I think people underestimate, and I do, this is me trying to be well-versed in what I've seen and witnessed. Fortunately, like, we're very busy. Like, things are so expensive now, and parents have to work all the time. So they don't really get to spend the time to cultivate like their kids, you know. I can't say like they should, but you know, like maybe like they will want to more just because like so busy. But kids learn so much faster, you know, than adults, to where if they get this knowledge early on, they'll be unstoppable. Because if you think about, I think I'm a millennial, so I think millennials started in 1980 through either 92 or 94. So I think after that you got Gen Z, and then I forgot what my baby brother and them, their generation is. But they pretty much had technology at their fingertips, you know, the whole time. They have these apps that they could take pictures of math problems and it figures it out for them. These kids, you see these babies. I have one of my little girls is 1 and the other one is 2. And without ever showing them, hey, how to swipe on the iPad, they can figure it out, you know? And you've tried to do the same thing like with an elderly person, and they're kind of confused. So these kids are evolving. So it is up to us to, hey, stimulate them and have them cut back a little bit on the idle time and not really do anything beneficial with their skills. You know, while they're on break, you know, find some coding tutorials or something like that geared towards kids. There's a book called Python for Kids where you can introduce your kids to that. And they can just do a lesson a day. And they may not like it at first. They may not ever like it. They might get introduced to, ooh, since you are an author, and these books don't necessarily have to be educational, they can just be anything that you learn from throughout life. What would be 3 books that you would recommend for the audience to read?
Okay. Oh, goodness. Wish I had them in front of me. One that I could think of off the top of my head is Total Self-Confidence. I cannot think of the author, but definitely going into my tech journey, I had to build up my self-confidence. And so I worked hard on that. I worked hard. So that was a book that helped with that. The Bible, my number one book. And just any book that's just a basic fundamental IT book on the subject that your viewers are interested in. Like, I would carry my books with me, my IT books. I just made sure and got that knowledge in my head. So always keep an IT book with you along with any other books that you love reading.
Okay. That's dope. Cool. So here's one. This one always turns into a good conversation. What's one question that you wish I asked you, and how would you have answered?
Oh, God. A question I wish you would have asked me. Maybe more about delving into. I loved when you started talking about being a mother and women in tech and how, you know, just how to deal with that. I would have loved to, I would have loved to help mothers. I actually started a program initially to help mothers in tech. And just from what I'd learned going along the way, I just wanted to reach back and provide that information. But I just think that's so important for women in tech, mothers in tech, to have support groups and just support in general, a mentor, a supportive partner, that makes a huge difference. So delving more into that, I think would have been great.
Yeah. I mean, and like kind of since you like opened up that, you know, that way, cause I went into that and then I was going to see like, did you want to carry that baton after I had the whole spiel earlier, but what would be some things, I guess, that you would suggest about that, or, you know, how to navigate that as far as like you said, supportive partners, mothers in tech, or some of the things that you try to do to help, you know, the mothers in tech?
I would say having a supportive partner is number one. Your spouse is going to make or break you as you're moving along on your tech journey. I mean, you're going to have to sacrifice some of that time with your partner in order to pursue your passion, and they have to be understanding of that. And they have to just allow you that time and that patience and be supportive. And being a woman in tech and what we may or may not deal with on the job, you have to have someone that you can go to and talk about that with, and that even if they haven't been through that situation, they don't understand it, that they can, you know, believe that you're actually going through what you're saying you're going through and be supportive of that. So that's extremely important. Like, if you don't have that, also having a mentor to encourage you along the way, that is super important. I've got a great mentor now who's just, I mean, he's just makes me like, just, I'm on fire for this thing. So those are two things. And I mean, it is a sacrifice, and understanding that and being okay with that and not coming down on yourself as a woman and as a mother so hard about the sacrifices that you have to make while you're on this journey.
Yeah, I would definitely agree to all that, you know, because it definitely is tough. It's, and being a, like, you know, the man of the house who, you know, has to say. But yeah, I was just going to add, like, being like the man of the house, like one of the things I always talk about, like, kind of go back and forth with it. You know, I have work, I have clients, and then I have self-study that I want to do to either stay sharp in my skills and learn a new skill. And it's a big sacrifice on everybody. And then especially sometimes if they don't understand that, if they really never had to do that. It's one of those things, like when it comes to being in tech, a lot of people don't understand what it takes to actually stay in. Because if you don't learn new things, or you don't stay sharp, you particularly get left behind. And so it's a very rewarding career, but it also takes work. I kind of make it like liken it to like sports and playing a sport. Like, you know, if you don't work on your game in the off season, if you don't practice, you might be okay for a while, but eventually you're gonna find your way out the league. We've seen that happen to so many different people. But my last question would be for you is, where can our listeners and viewers find you online?
Sure. So I am known as STEM Storyteller on all socials, on YouTube, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm most active on Instagram, but that's how you can find me.
Okay. Great, great, great. Well, guys, this has been another episode of the Textual Talk podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a comment below. There's some questions we didn't get to. Leave them in the comment section. Share this out with people you think need to hear this information. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, you know what to do. Go ahead and follow the podcast. Leave us a comment. I mean, actually, not a comment. I'm sorry. Leave us a review so I can keep on moving up in these chartable ranks. But like I always say, man, let's stay textual, and we out.